One of our favorite seasons is almost here. And at Lowe's, we're ready to bring on fall. Make that bathroom pop with matte black Moen fashion plumbing and faucets. Bring fresh color inside with a range of Seco paints. And build leaf piles for the kids and maybe yourself with a Craftsman leaf blower. If you're ready to bring on fall, visit Lowe's.ca to get home delivery or curbside pickup. Lowe's.
The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Today, we talked to Dahlia Israel. She's the executive director of the WAVA Rape Crisis Center, and we talk about what justice looks like for survivors of a sexual assault. This conversation made me pause, made me rethink what justice means, especially how our criminal legal system centers on the offender and not on helping the survivor recover. She also tells us about the new transformative justice program that WAVA is launching in October. Here's Dahlia.
Dahlia Israel, great to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dahlia, I was pretty excited when I saw the press release about transformative justice, because as a woman, the idea of going through the justice system after an incident of assault scares the bejesus out of me. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea what a transformative justice program would look like.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that we will be, in the coming months, figuring out what WABA's transformative justice process will look like. But at the end of the day, what I can say is that it really is going to be a very personalized process. So depending on a person's situation, we'll literally be the way that is mapped out for folks. So I think the only thing that will be in common is that people that are coming to the programming are looking for something that's outside of the criminal legal system for whatever reason, whether that's because they want to experience accountability from the person that has harmed them in a different way than what the criminal legal system offers, or they don't feel that the criminal legal system is accessible to them based on their lived experience and who they are in the world. Those will be the things that are more able to be in common with each other than the way that it's actually going to be playing itself out on the ground. So we're going to be working really closely with Just Outcomes. They are a small boutique restorative justice agency, organization, firm, and they have a wealth of knowledge and expertise around kind of more traditional restorative justice processes. So what we're going to be bringing to the table is our expertise around our analysis around power and gender, and we're going to be crafting this program together.
I want to talk a little bit about what you see as the need for this program, because as I was reflecting on sort of the experience of women with police and also the WABA justice system, I think about a couple of things that I've seen on the WABA website. One, that less than 1% of reports turn actually into convictions for when it comes to women reporting assaults. And then the other thing I was thinking about was how the Vancouver Police Department historically has not had a good record with its treatment of women. I think about Nicole Chan, who last year committed suicide after waiting a long time for her harassment complaint against her officers to be through with. But I also think about this idea of why put all this work into inventing a new option. You know, it's a 3-year project that WABA is funding for. That's not a long time when it comes to starting a system. What's the cost versus benefit of starting something new versus working within what you have, what we have?
Great question. So certainly this is about expanding the menu of options. WAVA has been instrumental in law reform and police reform over the past 38 years, and that won't stop. So we will continue to do reform work with the criminal legal system, and whether that's, you know, at the judicial level or within the court system or the policing system, that will all continue. The TJ piece really comes out of the past. Just at the end of March 31st, we've just wrapped two major projects. One was our justice project, which looked at the question, how do we increase confidence for survivors after sexual assault? And myself and the other project lead, we spent 3 years looking at what is it going to take from survivors. And so we interviewed 21 survivors and 10 justice system personnel. And we really wanted to get to the bottom of what that would look like. And while having what we're calling an autonomy-based practice was one of the things that we walked away from learning, that people really needed to be in a position of having agency and autonomy over the way that they interacted with the system. The other big piece that came out of it was this system actually isn't meant for survivors, right? The criminal legal system is really about offenders. It's about an offender's journey with the crime that they've committed, right? And so we keep trying to fit like a square peg into a round hole a little bit, because survivors are expecting a certain level of engagement with the system where they want to feel like they matter. They want to feel like their experience is seen and is dealt with in a way that is full of dignity and autonomy and care, that will be about accountability and all of those things. Like, that's not what the criminal justice system is set up to do. When we look at sexual assault before the courts, sexual assault is seen as a crime against the state. You know, people who've experienced sexual violence are seen as a witness to a crime. And so that really lays out the way that they get to engage with the system, and that the system is accountable to them also. So one of the big things was that we need another way. We need another way to get the things that we feel we need as survivors, which is about offenders taking accountability. And a lot of the times it's that grief circle that needs to be closed more than sending somebody to jail. It's that people want to be able to have the opportunity to have a journey with the person that has harmed them, where that person can do the learning and understand the harm that they've caused. But also to look at how the community that the person is from or the people are from that have upheld the conditions where that harm can even happen in the first place. And so when you talk to a lot of survivors and you talk to them about, like, why did you report? What was your impetus or your motivation for reporting? You know, 90% of people will say, I just didn't want this to happen to somebody else, right? I wanted the person that harmed me to not do this to somebody else, and to also understand the harm that they had caused. And the criminal legal system is also not set up to do that. But transformative justice is. It looks beyond just, so it's beyond a restorative process between two people, one who is harmed and one who has had harmed caused to them. And it looks at the conditions to which have been possible to let that harm happen. And so so that came out of the Justice Project. And then what we were also doing at the same time...
I'm going to slow you down, Dahlia, sure. Because you talked about a number of things that I want to follow up with.
Sure.
One of them that struck me is this idea that, so sexual assault is a crime against the state, mm-hmm. and the person, the survivor it happened to, is merely a witness. That blows my mind. And this actually makes me think about something Norm Leach at the Vancouver Aboriginal Community Policing Center was telling me about how colonization means that our legal system is set up to, it's really about the sin and the punishment, as opposed to this idea of how do we all walk away from it after.
Yes.
So crime against the state. How is it possible that our justice system is centered that way? Is that true? Because that's not true of other crimes, is it? If you commit murder, the victim is the person to whom crime is committed against. How is it that with sexual abuse, it's not the same case?
Yeah, well, I think we can go back to the roots again of colonization and the way that white settler colonialism introduced ideas of women, particularly as property. I think that we don't have to reach that far back, right? It was only 1983 where laws were changed where women who were in relationship with a spouse could even charge them with a sexual assault within their marriage. It was kind of seen prior to that as the contract, the marriage contract gave unfettered consent from the day that you got married. So when we look at the roots of all of our laws, we can very quickly kind of track them back to the way that colonization and the way that white settler thinking was brought to these lands to set up a very particular way of valuing people and genders in very different ways than what was here prior to contact. So yeah, absolutely. The intention is not to have people walk away from a criminal legal process in a more whole manner. It is about deterrence. You know, if we make your life feel really hard as somebody who has caused harm, hopefully you won't do it again because it was hard for you. It's not about the person that's been harmed. I mean, victim impact statements were only brought in 1993, I want to say. So even before that, like, your testimony was just meant to give evidence and to give like what you could contribute to the puzzle of the beyond the reasonable doubt. It was never to talk about how the harm had impacted you.
I think it leads us to this idea of the definition of justice or the purpose of justice, because mm-hmm. in our current justice system, it's to put this offender behind bars and make this person pay.
Right.
And you're saying, and let me just play the devil's advocate for a little bit, because isn't that what we want? Isn't that there, when someone commits an offense against me, you know, when if I'm not as, I'm not a very big person, so sometimes I'm like, I wish you get your comeuppance. And it's the second part of it is a deterrence factor. We make this person's life hard and then everyone else gets scared and they don't do it. With transformative justice, does that take away those two important results then?
So we started all of our interviews with survivors asking them what justice meant to them, because I think, to your point, I don't know if you've noticed, but I don't call it the criminal justice system. I call it the criminal legal system for a reason. I think we have to be careful about what we mean when we say justice. And when we do call the criminal justice system a criminal justice system, it certainly sets people up to think that whatever they feel is justice, that they can seek that. And that's just not the case. Because I think as we found out, every time we asked a person how they conceptualize justice, whether that's changed over time, whether before they were assaulted or after they were assaulted, did their version of what they imagine justice to be change or shift, right? These are very ideological concepts that have been largely shaped by the way that we've been raised in colonial society. You know, if you talk to Indigenous elders about traditions of what would happen prior to contact for people that had caused harm, it looked a whole bunch of different ways also. And it was what worked for the community, right? Because it was seen as a community issue. It wasn't seen in this neoliberal way where we just have two people and this is we're going to conceptualize it as like, it only impacted these two people and it didn't have a greater ripple effect. So that's one thing. Like, I think we have to be careful about what justice looks like. Yeah, I think that some people feel in the moments after they've been traumatized or harmed, I think there's a couple of things that often happen. And of course, this isn't for everybody, but one is, my goodness, I just want to be safe. Two is, yeah, I want that person to hurt as much as they've hurt me. And that can look like a whole bunch of different things. And then the third thing, usually where people land, is I just want them to like understand what the harm they've caused. And so when you look at the criminal legal system and you compare that to what transformative justice can offer, transformative justice seeks to possibly work with the offender, but not always, the person that's harmed, and really seeks to look at a much more holistic process and looks at what does healing from this, what does accountability, what would walking away from this in a good way look like for you? And then you start to map that out, and that can look like accountability pods for the person that's harmed. So structuring community and accountability for people that are going to be there to teach the hard lessons to the person that's harmed, and whether that's, you know, unraveling themselves from toxic masculinity or looking at how they've internalized patriarchy and misogyny. Like, it's all of those things are part of what a transformative experience can look like. And that, again, doesn't just stop with those two people. So while the survivor is having counseling and going through their own process, you know, hopefully the person that has harmed is also able to access, whether they're seeing a somatic practitioner to understand, like, what about their past has even led them into harming somebody else? And are there structures in society that have created the situation where they felt entitled to somebody else's body? Have they been harmed themselves? Do they need to heal from the harm that they've experienced? Because we know that most people don't come into harming somebody else without being harmed themselves in their history. Yeah, I think part of it is also looking at how kind of carceral ideas have also set us up to have these very rigid boundaries about, like, victim and perpetrator. And the reality is that oftentimes, like, those things cannot be in rigid boxes because they overlap.
I just have a little some hesitation around what you said there, because I don't want to put us in a frame of space where the perpetrator is, yes, a victim of structural oppression. I don't know if that sort of negates the experience of the person who's survived the sexual assault.
Yes, and nobody's talking about negating, for sure. But a lot of folks have experienced sexual assault or abuse themselves and then go on to harm other people in the same way. And we know that from stories, you know, that we've heard from people who have survived residential school, who have survived other atrocities and genocides in the world, that when people are not offered healing after their episode or have been shamed about their experiences due to structural oppression, particularly for male-identified people, if they have internalized homophobia, you know, those things get squished down pretty hard. They don't get to heal from those things, and then they can, you know, some people go on to harm other people. So when I'm talking about people being survivors, I'm not talking about you know, just experiencing structural oppression every day, but I'm actually talking about having a history of childhood sexual abuse or sexual violence.
That helps me understand it a little better. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious too, if what the ties in between this program and the very established police force or the legal system would be. I'm curious about how we get people who perpetrate violence to be part of this program.
So the other project that we were doing kind of parallel to the Justice Project was our inclusion project. And that was looking at expanding our service delivery to all two-spirit, gender diverse, and trans folks. And a couple of really big pieces came out of that project. One was that, you know, queer and trans community were not going to call police on each other. That for a community that has been criminalized for so long, that there's just no way that people would call the police, and that they need to have another space where they can have programming that attends to the needs of community. And when we held focus groups with sex working community and also with Indigenous community, very similar pieces were coming out. A lot of Indigenous folks were telling us that they would, never call police on somebody within their community that had harmed them because of structural racism and the experience of colonization and the way that the police are just set up on these lands. And I'm sure Norm has talked about that also. So I think that we really heard that loud and clear. And so this program will be piloted in communities that really told us that they needed this work. So we are going to be really concentrating on making this programming available to those justice-seeking communities that have been so impacted by structural inequality. And we're going to look at prioritizing them and files from those communities where you also have a community base to look at the conditions that are creating the opportunity for harm to happen, but also that this process will fall completely outside of the criminal legal system. And so different than restorative justice, where restorative justice in British Columbia is mostly used as like a diversion from criminal legal system, this will be completely outside. And so it will be, participant driven rather than anybody mandating anyone to do that. And then we'll have to work with those realities. So if the person that has caused harm absolutely doesn't want to come to the table, then we will, we'll look at doing work in community and all of those pieces.
Which communities and how many women do we think, women or women identified or other members of community, do we think that we can service through this program over the, I believe 3 years and $300,000 in funding?
Yeah, so we're looking at 5 files. So that's what our plan is. We know that this work takes a long time to do, and so we've committed to 5 files, and we will be prioritizing queer and trans, Indigenous, and sex working communities through the program.
And is that all in the Downtown East Side, or not necessarily in other parts as well?
Yeah, no, everything else will follow our general mandate, which is, right now we're all virtual anyways. We haven't kind of drawn geographic lines at this point.
I'm curious, Dahlia, what success looks like for you. Mm-hmm. When the 3 years wraps up, what would you like to see and what would you consider a success?
Well, I think just getting the funding to do it is a success. I mean, we'll be the first formalized transformative justice project in BC supporting sexual assault processes. That's pretty big, And certainly I have colleagues all across Canada that are like really kind of excited and looking at how we do this well for our sector in the sexual assault kind of world. So I think that being able to have those 5 files, to walk that journey with survivors, to make sure that we're documenting our learning alongside of them and creating the best possible experience for them will be success for us. We're dedicated to the process more than anything.
Thanks, Dahlia. Thank you so much for your time and for your work.
Thank you so much.
And that was Dahlia Israel. She's the executive director of the WAVRA Rape Crisis Center, and we talk about what justice looks like for survivors of a sexual assault. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO, your independent daily news show, here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. I'm Tan Macy. It's Friday. Take care and have a great long weekend.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Someone you know has probably experienced cancer, a heart attack, or stroke. The odds of experiencing one of these are high, which could result in bills for thousands of dollars in out-of-pocket expenses. How would you pay for it? With your savings? There is another option. It's called Active Care. Active Care is a supplemental health insurance policy that offers protection for covered cancer, heart attack, or stroke, and a choice of cash benefit options from $10,000 to $60,000. And with Active Care, the cash is yours to use as you see fit. Active Care is brought to you by Colonial Penn Life Insurance Company and is underwritten by Washington National Insurance Company. Get Active Care for cash, choice, and control. Visit ColonialPenn.com for more information. This is a limited benefit policy. This policy has limitations and exclusions. For costs and complete details of coverage, visit ColonialPenn.com.
The John Deere 324G skid steer from Brandt delivers large frame productivity in a mid-frame machine with extreme pushing power and industry-leading breakout force. Best of all, it's backed by Brandt, the best after-sales support in the business. That's powerful value delivered.